say we, who's
doing it? We have a couple of Talmidim of Chaim Berlin.
Oh.
More Mitzionim. In fact, one of them was Chaim Grunis's father.
Oh, yeah?
Moshe Zichron Levakov. He, we used to travel there periodically to talk and learning with him. And that was, I think, the... I don't know how long that lasted. But
so that was during the war?
Yeah, that was during the war years, right? In fact, we one time, I remember, we were... The section there where he lived was a German... a lot of Germans or pro-Nazi people there. In that area, before he moved to Borough Park.
Uh-huh.
And we once went to see him, and then we had to make some phone call or drink some water or seltzer or something, and there was a whole bunch of Nazis there that, Nazis, I mean, pro-Nazi Germans that attacked us.
Yeah. That was on the Upper East Side, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Upper, maybe it was the Upper East Side, but they were around, and they attacked us at the time. I remember it was related to, we went up there as a group to, we had to run, things like it. So in all cases, that was the time.
Who was your Rebbe in Chaim Berlin at that time?
Well, I was in the Beis Medrash, Rav Hutner.
Rav Hutner was there then?
Sure, Rav Hutner was there in the 30s.
I didn't know that.
He came there much before I did. I came in 1941, so this must have been 43, maximum 44. I don't remember exactly.
Where did you come from?
I came from, before I went there, actually I was in the high school.
Uh-huh.
I came there as a very young Bach. I was in the high school.
You were born in America, though.
I was born in America. I came to the high school from Talmudical Academy. That was the high school of Yeshiva Yitzchak.
Oh, yeah. BTA.
BTA, all right, whatever it was. That time wasn't BTA, it was Manhattan.
Oh,
I only had a school in Manhattan. I traveled to Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to, then I was in the Beis Medrash. I came there in 1941. I came to Chaim Berlin, and this must have been a few years later that we... But I went straight into the Beis Medrash. My Rav Hutner was the Rebbe that I knew. And that's where I had come from.
Okay, so... When did you come to Lakewood to learn, actually?
That was in Tavshin Ches, 1948.
Mm-hmm.
And that was some arrangement that Rabban had made, some arrangement with Rav Hutner. Mm-hmm. Because Rav Hutner sent some Bachim there.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent him, I think there was a, he was supposed to say, I heard this, I don't know exactly, maybe you know from your people there, from other people, Rav Hutner was supposed to say some kind of schmoozen there.
Schmoozen,
Ashkafa schmoozen, or schmoozen in Lakewood. And in the meantime, he sent him Bachrim. I would say about, we must have been 7, 8 Bachrim.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of the Rosh HaChabura.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did, Rabban, I dealt a lot with about the Bachrim, etc., etc.
Who were some of the people you came with?
I don't know if you know them. Some of them are not the Elam Emes. Shia Levine, I remember, was there. It was one person. And let me see, who else? Levon Schechter came there for a short time. He was there for a few weeks. He wasn't there full spot. He was there for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And...
What was the experience like going from Chaim Berlin to Lakewood? What were some of the differences?
First of all, I would say, I will say this. In Lakewood, first, the people that were there at that time were all much bigger Mitzionim than generally find now, because it was a small Maisid Nabal. The Baum didn't take some of the Welterein. He took, he wanted choice Talmidim, and I think he had to know the Bach, or certainly could receive very good recommendations for him. So the Eilam was a much more, was Terasim Nasam, while Chaim Berlin already had some boys going to college. It was Terasim Nasam, and it was all, when I was there in Tavshin Ches, Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky was learning there. He wasn't married.
Right.
Maybe he was married. I don't remember when he got married. Rabbi Yeshua was there,
mm-hmm.
learning. I learned in the same, know, the one that was the Bliskalov Zaydim was learning there.
Schiff.
Schiff was learning there at that time. The Rav Shneya was learning there.
Uh-huh.
Rav Shneya and his and also his Adim at the time, you know, Sarah's husband. This was before the get. So they and the big Olam from Kletsk was there. Kletsk, those who survived the war with Rabban the whole time, and they were all, you know, this was a much more advanced Olam than Chaim Berlin. It was all the and then you had the Feivelstock was the Feivelson. All those who became Rosh Hashivas, the present Rosh Hashivas were learning at the time there when I was there. I'm just mentioning a few to you. So that so immediately you had a much more advanced, much more much bigger lamdim than Chaim Berlin, and much more. And the ruach, of course, was you weren't there for any other purpose but learning. I mean, you didn't come there to battle. That was the atmosphere, and Rabban said a shia primarily on Shabbos. He said a shia on Shabbos. He didn't say a shia during the week because he was in New York the whole week, busy with Askanis Tziburi and I think with a lot with Eretz Yisrael, with Chinuch Atzmai, with etc. With other inyanim, with Hatzolah inyanim. It was at that time was when that was very whatever it was. He was in New York a lot, and the whole week, and then he came on Shabbos. And the Shia, he said on Shabbos, he said Friday night, he said Torah and the Tish, mostly on the Sedra, and Shabbos afternoon, he said his Shia. He said, I think I forgot when he said it, but he said the Shia, and the afternoon, on the afternoon, and then Shabbos, to, and Shalosh Shudas, he would, it would be like people talking to him a little bit about the Shia. Etc. This was the whole atmosphere was a totally different one than Chaim Berlin. Chaim is in the middle of a city with all kinds of people there, and some going to colleges, I told you, some not, and some must meet him, some not. And certainly not that advanced in learning. Had some very big, good mitzvahim in there, but not the, this was a different island altogether.
What was his shiurim like compared to anything else?
Yeah, well, you're touching on a very sensitive area. I think his shia was a very complicated one. He said a lot of. He would say svaris that another Rosh Hashiva would say and would make a whole shia out of it. He would say it in 1, 2, 3, and then the rest was. Was a pilpul and she tossed her, and on this one holds this way, and this one holds this way, and also very fast, very fast. You had to hold cup, and in my own opinion, I would say, and maybe I'm being even maybe conservative. I think 85 to 90% of the Shia was lost. I don't think they understood the Shia too much. In other words, they may have gotten a little bit at the beginning, but. And he advanced. It was Duvamis, which is a very hard Masech that we were learning that year. I was there for 1 year at that time. And he was, because I got married the following year, and I became a Rosh Hashiv in Chaim Berlin. So I left that after that year, though Rabban wanted me very much to stay in the Kollel, but Rav Hutnat offered me to be in the Beis Medrash to say a Shia, and that was more preferable to me. But the so I was there for 1 year, and the Masech was Duvamis, and Rabban would say the Shia. I don't. My own impression was that it was a small miyuta that really got a lot from the Shia. Most would be lost in the Shia, as they didn't. Did not really get the full tellus from the Shia.
There had to be a lot of preparation for this year too, right?
I don't know. I don't know how much preparation went in. Probably
no, I mean for the students.
Yeah, you mean you talk about the Talmidim, whether they prepared for the Shia in terms of what the Matam Alchemists were?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think each individual was prepared. I know I didn't prepare too much for the Shia. I did maybe unless you bought some Gemaras that I may have spent some time. I certainly didn't spend extensive time on preparing for the Shia. I used to talk a lot to the Shishivas, but course, you're doing Shabbos Shuddas on the Shia.
Mm-hmm.
I talked a lot. I had a lot of Shadim with him on the Shia, and he did not encourage people to ask questions in the Shia. He was Malaflam Kaf. He was very sharp in his cutting you off the play desk or something like it. And he right away knew what the question was. He anticipated it, and he pounced on. It was Zischa that I said. I mean, Chas v'Shalom, he didn't mean anything. He didn't mean anything he was excited from the Shir, and I think people knew it that way. The Talmid, no one took it to heart if you got called that you were playing in the Vesna Chesavet, so you didn't. You know, Sharp, there was not very much Magamasa. They listened to the Shir attentively. There was, if you would ask, in a certain sense, you would be. You're sticking your neck out.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you my halfway that happened to me. This happened to me. From the home mishpacha, I think this is Kedai, I told it over to Amal Kiel.
Yeah.
It's an example of Reb Shneya's Avos HaTorah, of his father's HaTorah.
Uh-huh.
The Baal Masechta Shia, this was in Zvachim, there was another group that learned, the regular Masechta was Yevamos.
Uh-huh.
In the afternoon, at a certain point in time, he was saying a shir also in Zvachim. I remember it was the end of Zvachim.
Mm-hmm.
And I attended that shir. That was not attended by the whole Olam. I remember, I think at Radio Shvei, a lot of the Kletzka, Shmuel probably attended that shir. During that shir, one time, I asked him a kasha from another Masechta.
Yeah.
He was saying Zvachim. I remember it was Chum.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought for a minute, and he said a pshat that would answer it. And I said, but l'chayda the way Taisa was learning pshat not gemar. I remember the sukkah, overall sukkah I remember was kachim shemesu yatsma demi. That's all I remember. What I asked him, I don't remember because it was such a long time ago. This is a cheshbon I was married and it was the tafshin ches, so you could figure out it's 50 more than that. 60 years.
Right.
So it's 60. I was there Tavshin Ches. Now that's 48.
Yeah.
Now to, so it's 60 years.
Right.
More. What am I saying? Already. Yeah, 98 was 5 years. 60 years.
Right.
So it took. So I asked him a kasha. Remember the circuit was kachim shemesi. Asked him the meila. I asked him a kasha from another, and I said the taste was learned.
Yeah.
It's a chayda. It's shver.
Yeah.
And he thought and thought and thought. And said it's a kasha. And I think I like that made history in Lakewood. You know, when somebody should ask a kasha, usually you got your head chopped off. And here he remained with the kasha. So I never discussed it further with him. With the she never spoke to me. Reb Shneya, I'm coming about Reb Shneya, when he was alive, this is the last year of his life.
Yeah.
He used to come to every year there was a Kabbalah's Panim Akinus during the Kinus Tshuva. There wasn't a Kinus Tshuva, it was like a sefer for the fundraising of the yeshiva in the Bunim House in Far Rockaway.
Yeah.
I came there, I just moved to Far Rockaway. So it must have been, I don't know how long he's. Whatever it was last year of his life. Amos Bunim.
Uh-huh.
He was in Amos Bunim's house in Far Rockaway. I used to say this, but I remember it was the last year of his life, so I don't remember exactly what year it was at Philip Schneier's life. He came to the Shia, and I came the Lechvoida, I came to the Shia and to the house for the year. No, in other words, he spoke of Schneier. Before that, the Baum had been there years before that I wasn't there, but because it was before my time, I came to Far Rockaway. I may even have come specially to it, but otherwise I was in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And we then afterwards there was a Kabbalah upon him there,
mm-hmm.
and he said to me like a Kabbalah upon him of food, you know, after the shir and after the collection, after they would give some checks, people would give, they would go around, the gabbai would go around and collect whoever was the there was like a reception for people at the table for the Rosh Hashiva, and some people sat down to have some refreshments, cake, etc. This after the Shia.
Right.
Then as figured it out.
Membez, he was listening.
Membez? Yeah. So how many years is it now? It's already...
Just
82. Samach, more than 20. More than 20, about 25 years already.
Right.
All right, so that's the cheshbon. That's the cheshbon. It wasn't definitely 25 years ago, so it was last year. I'm here 30 years in Far Rockaway, so I was already living in Far Rockaway. So he is the Gedenkst.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is, he's talking about 35 years before.
Right.
Now, I was there, Tavshin Ches.
So,
he's talking to the last year of his life. He says, the Gedenkst is a monk effect, my Tata Akasha.
He remembered that you
wait.
Question then.
Wait. He said, wait, more than that. He said to me, I said, I remember the sugya that it was on, but I don't remember the kasha.
Uh-huh.
So he said to me, but now isn't the occasion to tell it to me. He would like to tell me what, and I didn't even remember what the kasha was, but I knew this. He wants to tell me what he said and how that would have answered his father's kasha, the kasha to his father. And I was hoping, and then he would got very sick.
Uh-huh.
And that was the year he was nifter or something, and didn't he? That he was yet nifter the following year. So I never heard from him. I remember I went to visit him in Boston when he was in the hospital there.
Uh-huh.
But he was already in his geisus. He was talking very weakly. But it wasn't shy. I didn't come there for that. I came there for Bikur Cholim.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And but in all cases, I never heard what he said. But I went. I told him, Makia, look at the other side that exists in that
mm-hmm.
house. That if somebody asked the kasha,
yeah.
And I told you it was like you rarely, and all the time I was there, it was certainly never happened. I'll tell you, it's like almost like my like a stock market a person is way down. All of a sudden, not that I was way down, but you know, I became like a you know, my stock was lifted up from in the yeshiva. Mm-hmm. Like somebody asked about a kasha that he admitted in publicly that it's a kasha on what he was saying on his yeshivas. It was like, and it went. This he had to find something to defend for his father. That he's for 35 years later, he tells me that he said a shia to answer what I asked.
Really impressed that he remembered that Reb Schneir remembered that kasha.
He must have written it down. The father may have spoken to him about it, and he said, but that's what I was telling Amartya. Look at the, you know, people. I don't remember it. And how many people would have that chavivas nabas atayra? Like Reb Schneir revealed to answer that somebody should ask a kasha on his father.
Yeah.
Shia was like he had to answer that. It was an interesting experience that I had with the Baum there. I'll tell you one other nice and that I think is important that I felt was very important.
Yeah.
There was a bocha that came there who apparently Rav Hutna had praised him. Praised him to Rav Aaron to take him in, you know, there. Told him that Rav Bocha that came from Chaim Berlin.
Yeah.
And this Bocha, who Rav Hutna had praised apparently, came to one or two shiurim of Rav Aaron, and then stopped, was there without coming to the shiur. Maybe 1 week to go, I don't know. Rav Aaron, I told you, I was sort of the Rosh HaChabura for those who came from Chaim Berlin. So he called me over.
Yeah.
He used to talk to me. I talked to him a lot. Learning and talked to me, and he said to me, do I know why this bacha is not coming to the shia? And I really didn't even know that he wasn't coming. You know, when I come to the shia, I don't go around looking behind me who's at the shia and who's not. But he sees everybody, and he knew that this person, even though there were 90 people there, he knew that this person didn't attend the shia. He was very conscious of everything that went on in the Olam, you know, in terms of at least knowing who was present. I don't know how much he felt the Olam understood his shia. In that sense, I'm not talking about that, because I think he was so involved in the shia, but he knew this bacha. He says he called me in, and when he said, the shashiv, Rav Hutnat, Adam Zeya Gerim Tfamir. Do I know why he's not coming?
Yeah.
I said, I didn't even know that he's not coming. I certainly don't know why. So he said to me, I should Elvis Bacher. That's what I found incredible. Asher Elvis Bacher, I said over the Yeshiyudim, he said, I said them over the Pchaimizer. These are Yeshiyudim, I guess, in Yavamis, etc. Yavchaimizer, Baruch Ber, he rattles off all the, like, the European Gdolim of his day. When Zem Ze'ala Gerimt, and they praise that this is, you know, good, very good Torah, etc. I should say this Bacher, so as I'm ganz kommen in der Welt, it's kedai to hear these shiurim.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, I was stunned, you know, that the how much he held from the Shia. Yeah. There's nothing, it was so revealing at this mice that he said, you know, this way. And I didn't really want to tell it to the Bacher, because as I knew why the Bacher didn't come. Uh-huh. He didn't come because he didn't understand it.
Oh.
And he was having, and not that he ever told me, I never discussed it with him, but I was in a dilemma what to do. Uh-huh. Here he gives me a shlichus. I knew that all I'm going to do is hurt him more.
Uh-huh.
The Bacher was not able to fall to this kind of a shia.
Uh-huh.
In the speed of his mind, of the balance, that's what I was talking about before originally, how few people understood the shia fully, at least fully. Uh-huh. Maybe they got a little bit out of it. But he just was lost in the shia. Uh-huh. Had, as a result, Chalishas Hadas, that he couldn't, that he comes here and he doesn't understand the shia. So rather than have that feeling of failure or dissonance, he just didn't come to the shia.
Mm.
You know, that was, I knew that was the reason. I knew the person. I knew the person's head and his ability. While he had a certain type of head, not the type that would understand a Baal Shia, because of the speed of the svaris and, you know, and the lishitasas and the pilpul. You had to have a certain quickness of head. And,
were you able to discuss it with some other people after the shia?
Wait, let me just finish this point. Let me tell you what. So I didn't go to tell, I didn't tell this Bacher. On the other hand, he asked me to do a shlichus.
Yeah.
So luckily, the Bacher left the yeshiva.
Uh-huh.
He left the yeshiva, so I never got across the message, and you know, I didn't get the message, and I didn't, you know, have to do it anymore. And I never really heard him by telling him something that would just give him much, that the Baal observed is not coming, and it was causing him aggravation, and especially to tell him his whole world is coming here is Kedai for the Yeshiva. He felt, the Baal felt that you're giving him a dishonor.
Uh-huh.
He felt that he was like it was a lack of covet of Torah, not personally to him. That person doesn't come to Yeshiva.
Uh-huh.
All right, now you ask me another question.
Did you have, were able to discuss the Yeshiva afterwards with other people to fill in the gaps?
Well, there were people there that knew the Shia. I think other people tried, went over it with them. But there was an attempt, certainly an attempt, there were a couple of people there that were involved, that their function was like to repeat the Shia.
Yeah.
Now, those who were from the few, obviously, that knew the Shia fully, and there was people that I didn't have to, because I knew the Shia.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying it in self-boasting, it just, that was the, I didn't have to, I wasn't, but I knew there was such Bachram that did this. I discussed a lot of the Shia with Tudor Baal directly when he was still there in the yeshiva, whether Shal Shudas
mm-hmm.
or other times. This way I would, whatever would bother me, mm-hmm. I would do in the Shia, that I wouldn't state publicly, that I would talk about, I would talk to him privately.
Mm-hmm.
This way I talked to the Baal himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to point out one thing. When I say the Baal's Shia wasn't directly, that they didn't understand, that they've, I don't know whether you've heard from these 190, but I think you would, if people were MS, a lot of them would tell you this was the, that not too many people understood the Shia.
This was told to me many times.
All right, now what I think though is, so the Shia is then, what do they get from Lakewood?
Right.
If they're from the Shiva Shia, they didn't get, I could say this, the B'yosha Be'er Salvechik,
yeah.
who was a very big, you know, market Shia, would take from what the Baal said in 5 minutes and make a 1 hour shiur for
uh-huh.
him. Because he was a gewaltig amount masber, slow, etc. The Baal didn't, he just sped along at the, and there's, you know, you have to have that kind of a head that you type it quickly, you don't have to do any thinking. The shayla then is what, besides the fact that it was a very good chabura, what did they get from the Baal? I think the fact that everyone saw a a tremendous Adam Gottl, who and his Schlemus, his Gewaldiger, you know, Eisgehaltenkeit, his, of course, his Gottlus, everyone was Markish. And then being in the presence of a person davening with him, when they davened on Shabbos, just watching him, was a very, very big, had a very big hashpo on people. It was more in an abstract, indirect way than the shir itself. But don't, in other words, I don't want you to get the impression that the bound didn't play the, his, you felt that another Gottl was there. You felt that everyone knew he was godless, and you felt that his anhugge, his, how he carried himself, his, when he spoke, Devei Musa, when he spoke this way, you know, everything was menalev, and, you know, it, he was, he had a, he was a very big inspiration in, into every people, everyone there, irrespective of whether they understood the shir or not. I think this is a very important point. So I don't, you know, I'm not diminishing his hashpah in any way. In a different way, it was a hashpah indirectly, rather than directly with the shir.
So had you any other experience with him that are interesting to know that you had, what would I say, B'mil D'Alma and other experiences that were not directly related to the shir itself?
Well, I was involved with him mainly. I was also involved with him when I was left the shir. I would, if I had a difficult psak, I used to call him for psak halacha. I remember once this, the problem, I had once a problem with being Masada Kedushin at a wedding, that I felt the chasm kala would not be zored in Taras Mishpacha. And I wanted to know, I was a rav, then I was a shivach in Berlin and a rav, rabbi somewhere in Lawrence, Long Island. Lawrence in Queens, it was really not, it's called, it was right on the edge of Queens on that. I called a baron once in my mutter to be Masada Kedushin at a wedding where I know they won't eat Taras Mishpacha. And he said I should because of the fact they're going to get married anyway, it's not a Shalabia, and instead of I, you're not allowed to be Machzik Deir Aveda, even though it's Chad Av Denara, it's the, you know, they'll do it anyway. But the fact in this case, I was, if they'll go, they'll go to a reverend or to some conservative rabbi, and they'll get married anyway, and the Kedushin won't even be good. This way, at least the Kedushin was good, so they weren't living together as... So he felt that instead of being instead of being Messiah of the Avraveda, anyway, he told me that I should be Messiah Kedushin. I had that one once with him. I once had also... there was a big sechzuch in Yeshiv, in the Teres Chaim, which is South Yeshiv of South Shore. Now, I think what that went was a carryover from Teres Chaim, originally in Eastern New York. And my son was going there, and I didn't feel that the that there was they had no minyan. They had the bus service brought people very late, and then they brought, now they came to it. Most of the people were bussed in, a lot of people, and they learned. Sometimes they didn't start learning until late. Let's say late 10 o'clock, and it finished. Then the chayil started. I felt the hours were not sufficient. So the shayla was, should they daven there? Or it was a very interesting shayla to be machriya, and to be, it, which is more important for them, to tell them to daven b'yachidus to the betzibur and not, but not have, hello?
Sorry, I just had a separate call. Somebody was calling me. Go ahead.
So the question was, which is more important? That let's have like this: they would, the davening and the breakfast would take some total, especially on Monday, Thursday, would take an hour and a half. Now at that time they lost a good hour and over an hour in learning at that time. Which of the two is stronger? Which of the two should you daven b'tzibur with less time for learning? And so. Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky, who was the founder of that school, I had I felt that they should just be mechayev their talmidim, but they have to have a certain minimum of hours of learning, unless they're learning, they're going to suffer very much, and their purpose was there. And Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky asked, And he presented his view in the name of his father, that some of them may not daven. If they're told to daven, although this was, you know, fairly for them of families, if they have to daven at home and have more for learning, and the Baum said paskin like I did.
That what?
That they should not have, they should eat, daven at home and eat at home and come there and have a greater time for learning. So he was achroi in Chedas Hadas. You're asking me that I have, it was more post-Lakewood that I could remember.
Right.
Not so much in Lakewood. I gave you just some key things that I remember about these incidents and how much he helped from his Shia with Aram Haza. It's where you're all coming on this world. It was goodbye for that, to hear the Shiurim and you know, things like in my general view of what his godless was. And but then also he was very much involved. At that time, there was a big issue about the Board of Rabbis.
What year was that?
This year was probably, I left the yeshiva right in Tavshun Ches. As I told you, I was also a yeshiva, I was also a rabbi. This must have been sometime during the 50s.
Uh-huh.
When was the Baal Nifta? 1960?
62. 62.
I would say this was 53, 54 around that time. He was Nifta, and the
Board of Rabbis.
And the Board of Rabbis, it was a big issue, the Board of Rabbis, in terms of rabbis joining the Synagogue Council, which was a combination of synagogues, conservative Orthodox reform, and the Board of Rabbis was composed also of all these rabbis, and many of the rabbis joined for chaplaincies, the only way you can get a job from the city, etc., and some of them in principle, a lot of these common rabbis in principle, you know, you have to be together, etc., whatever it is, and the Baum took a very strong view of this, they took a very, and we got him to speak publicly at a time that he should come, and he put himself, I could say, he was very, very outstanding in his opposition to, that he took, you know, it was very clear that there could be no pressure whatsoever, and in davening, and you know, in the shuls, and hein in the rabbanim, could be any pressure with conservative reform, that he can't be mishtatif with them whatsoever. At that time, now everyone would understand it. That time was an Olam Golem, and the most of the people were modern Orthodox, best with a lot of Amalatsis, and the chief rabbis around, the big rabbis, meaning the ones who had big and tight, I mean that big position, they were all on, and they recused, one of them in fact, gave a name to Rabban's Shita of separation. In that respect, he called it Cutlerism.
Who was that?
That was Lookstein. Lookstein.
Oh, sorry, I just told that to somebody yesterday, and he told me it was somebody else. And I
No, it was Lookstein.
Right.
Lookstein, the rabbi, of, you know, and RCA. That big shul. These were the big rabbis, that had the big shuls, a lot of money they controlled. Mizrahi was controlled by them, and then most of the people then were not Mizrahi.
Yeah.
And the Cutlerism meant isolation. He once said this at a meeting, and Baum once took a stand that I think one of them even threatened him, threatened that they'll go out against the yeshiva or cut off fundraising for the yeshiva or hurt the yeshiva financially, and he stated that it's kedai to close the, if he has to close Lakewood, he won't ever say anything different than what he said, you know, etc., which, you know, if this was the Baum.
He had to say things today which we take for granted.
Yeah, right. At that time it was a battle. He was a Das Yachid, and I was very much involved in getting him to getting him to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, I remember one time too, there was the David Hollander.
Yeah, right.
David Hollander wanted to, the organization, Union of Orthodox, the organization, they were involved in the Synagogue Council, that's why I said the Orthodox was represented there, and a lot of the rabbis personally joined the Board of Rabbis, and commander wanted Skomer that the Rabbonim, especially the Gudus Rabbonim, should come out. At that time, the Baum had with the Moshe were on the Presidium or something. The Gudus Rabbonim, the Gudus Rabbonim was dying, and they needed prestige, and they represented the Dor HaYoshen, and the Baum and the Moshe Feinstein and the Yaakov were all associated with it in some way, and I think the Baum was the on the Presidium, or certainly had a big day there. So they wanted that organization to come out, and or at least he should come out with a Gedolim, that you can't rely on the Hechsher of the OU if they're part of the synagogue council. If they break Das, remember the rabbis had signed on a document. There was 11 signatures of Big Gedolim HaDor at that time against this. Biskarov was on the signature. The Baum initiated it, so there was 11 Gedolim that came out that is also to be on the board of rabbis and also to be on the synagogue council. And that was revolutionary at that time. So the question was, they were deliberately violating this, and how could you rely on the Hechsher, etc.? So I remember on a Halamayah, and he wanted me to come because he knew I was very close to the Baum. He wanted me to come with him, Hollander. And we went out there once. I remember on Halamayah, I don't remember it was Sukkot or Pesach, I think it was Sukkot. We came out, there was a Baum used to be in the yeshiva at that time. We came out, and I remember the Baum said he didn't want to do this. He said he can't do it. He says, you know why? And it was very, this is typical of the Baum. He said, you'll say to them, say to somebody, take out a kisem, a little piece of wood from between your teeth. He'll answer you, take out the beam from your eyes. In other words, a Gudus Rabbonim was fulfilled, and with a shaven. So what are they're threatening? They're going to threaten.
I see, right.
So he even though he may have helped from the idea, but he helped with them, and he himself didn't, would be, so again, he's machmir kutlerism. But that Gudus Rabbonim at that time had some prestige, at least as the older organization, the old rabbis. He said they're going to say to them, you know, what are you telling us what we're doing about kashrus? And, you know, he answered very, very, very to the zach and clear, and I'm giving you an incident that happened with him. He understood. He was very, very big pikeach. Gewaldig pikeach, you know, this, and very, of course, sharp and very strong, very opinionated, very strong as opinions, you know, that, let's say, in Heiberg to let's say, Meish, that was soft. Soft personality, I mean, not that he wasn't this, but the man was, you know, powerful, very big manig. He was a manig, as well as being a big Rosh Hashiva, he was a big manig. He saw him extremely smart, extremely picus, and would voice whatever he had to say in a lead, that was his he was a dynamic personality. And he suffered at the time, he suffered this, this thing, they threatened him with, that's the time why he said that, they threatened him, it's going to hurt his yeshiva, and he said, look, I can't, you know, I, in this matter, he was, I'll close the yeshiva, if you can put it this way, but I mean, he's not going to budge on this, because he held it from the ikrim of all Torah, not to be mishtatif with this, with them. So I'm giving you a lot of things that you may not have.
I was aware of these things, but I didn't know it was from this angle.
Yeah, all right. I don't know whether they. You see, the people that you ask are probably just from Talmidim. These are things that I had with him more as I left the yeshiva.
Askonis.
Yeah, this attitude of this. I think it's you obviously got. Amos Bunim, because he wrote a book, and he knows a veld of the Akifis, and
he had a lot of feeling about it.
Right, I want to tell you one other thing that I think is important. I didn't witness all these things. I was part of myself.
Right.
But I heard once from the first executive director, I don't know if he's still alive even, way at the beginning in the 40s yet, he told
What was his name?
I forgot his name. He later on became a rabbi in Montreal.
I interviewed him.
Did he tell you? Let me tell you what he told me. Yeah, tell me if you interviewed him. I don't even know if he's alive. I haven't had any contact with him.
He was alive when I interviewed, of course.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I didn't know that he's alive. Now I know.
He was a rabbi in Montreal. And he was very, he came across, the name is on the tip of my tongue, I just remember where it was. And he remembered, he was very, very close in feeling to the Rosh Yeshiva. Like he was very close.
Yeah, so I don't know whether he told you, he told me this story once, that maybe he told it to you, but it's
I know who you mean. You mean Leib Baron?
No. Not Baron, no. Somebody else, I don't even know if he's, as I said, I don't even know if he's alive. He was from way back from the, he told me, I knew he was from the involved fundraising for Lakewood. He told me that they were desperate, this is way back at the beginning of the yeshiva, desperate for money.
Yeah.
Paying bills, paying whatever they had in the yeshiva, they had no, they were, he was desperate.
Yeah.
What happened was that a check came.
Yeah.
Wrote some letter Gordon was Reuven's daughter. She's married there and lives there, Reuven Feinstein's daughter.
Yeah.
She said, her name is Eichenstein. I forgot the name, but she's married to very Eliezer, I refer to Moses' first name, Eisenberg.
Uh-huh.
Eliezer Eisenberg.
Yeah.
So she said, somehow or other the conversation came up about Lubavitch with Mashiachias and things like it.
Yeah.
She said, somebody told her Zayde, that's a Moshe, that the Rebbe says that he's Mashiach, or they think he's Mashiach. So Rabbaum would do what? He would storm about it.
Right.
For Rabbaum would hear it. She said, she tells me, her grandfather said, Alavai.
Alavai Ish.
Yeah, I know, let it be honest, that he should be Mashiach. You see the difference of it. This is the difference.
Attitude.
The difference, you know, Rabbaum would storm. What do you mean, Mashiach? Who would he didn't hold from the Babish? He's going to hold it,
today I think he would have stormed about it, my personal opinion, because it's such a nonsense, it's not worth talking about.
Yeah, but then, remember, it was the beginning of this, whatever it was, but this was Halavai.
Yeah.
It's a very, I know, she said it, so it must be, anyway, so I'm giving you Rav Shach picked up this, he didn't know if he picked up this story, but he picked up the fact that there was a scalvers meet seed the Moshe, and he said since about he's talking about Pesach Halacha, that Moshe was from the Gedolei Poskim of the Dor.
Yes.
But in terms of Manig, since about Peter, there's no Manig.
Right.
All right, anyway, it's something for you. I wouldn't put that on a tape, but you should know what he said.
Yeah.
I mean, tape the story with Lubavitch is a different area. I don't know if anybody touches on that in all your tapes.
No,
it's better. No, that would be negative, and that. But none of them, you know, none of them came to his levaya.
Uh-huh.
It's the only cut. Satmarav was there. Satmarav was maspid. All the chassidim came.
Uh-huh.
They all recognized the godless of Rabban from all shades, but Lubavitch wasn't there because of this. If what he had said that time, you know, they knew he was misnaged to the whole shita.
Uh-huh.
All right, be well and have a shlach
rabbi.
Yeah, the Ban Yishev's chusim, as you say, and